All right, here's our format today. Each candidate's going to have 10 minutes for opening remarks, and they're going to be followed by, they will select who of you in the audience they want to ask them a question. Please welcome our board member, Marilyn Miller, to introduce the program today.
Welcome our former governor, Charlie Crist, and District 13 incumbent, David Jolly. Thank you, Governor Crist, for your long service to our state and our community.
It's not working. You have to hold it. Sorry. You got to get a little closer. I'm making her all flustered. It's my fault. Deep breath, start over.
And thank you, Congressman Jolly, for your service to us in Washington. Oh, to be in Washington, D.C., singing the praises of District 13. From Clearwater, south of where Congressman Jolly was born in Dunedin, to the tip of Tierra Verde, where Governor Crist has swum, boated, and fished. From the mansions of Bel Air Beach to the sunsets on Paso Grill, wow. It's hard to imagine what Congress can do for us. Our incumbent Congressman Jolly decided to run again for his seat. And Governor Crist decided he wanted to take his vast knowledge of our fabulous state and district to the floor of Congress. What a fortunate choice we are presented with. We can't make ourselves look too perfect, though, in the eyes of all the other districts in the land. We are not perfect. When you take the cream off the top, we do have an aging infrastructure, and that's not just us baby boomers. With our dense population, transportation innovation is crucial to our economic development. There are citizens among us who are homeless, disabled, displaced, ill, disenfranchised, abandoned, and abused. Veterans living in homeless projects and needing assistance. We are not perfect. From the Home Shopping Network to Tech Data to Raymond James, from Bay Pines Veterans Hospital to the White Sands of the Don Cesar, we do have many treasures to preserve. It is up to us, the voters, who all have a want for our little slice of paradise. Between these two worthy candidates, who will we decide is going to stand up for us and bring home the bacon? Come on, Tigers. Let's try and get some new sound bites today from these two polished, credentialed candidates. Let's give a rousing Tiger welcome to Governor Charlie Crist and Congressman David Jolly.
Well, thank you all very much for being here. Words you rarely hear a Republican say, it's great to be in the Tiger's Den. Look, I think this is one of the great civic organizations in the region. I think we should hold candidates accountable, we should ask hard questions, and we should expect candidates and elected officials are able to answer hard questions. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I believe we both have 10 minutes. I won't take 10 minutes. I do think as much questions and answers as we can get to is more valuable. We've got a decision to make, folks, as a county, as a state, as a country. And I say this personally. I had had the opportunity in life to spend nearly 20 years with my predecessor, Bill Young, to see the days of legislating before it was overtaken by partisanship and by campaign finance. And in 3 years, I've tried to change politics as we know it today on very hard issues. Most of the time, at great political risk, frankly, within my own party, on my own side of the aisle. But understand what I've tried to do differently is I've actually worked to try to build consensus between the parties on the issues we face today, the hardest issues that have divided us over recent years. Republicans and Democrats can actually work together on consensus proposals. It's not enough to just stick to your own party line and talk nicely about those on the other side of the aisle. Our job is to actually work together to create consensus. And so I've tried to do that. First and foremost, on the issue of campaign finance reform, on calling out both sides of the aisle on a system that I think is broken, where members of Congress spend too much time raising money and not enough time doing their job. I think we should apply to members of Congress the same rules we apply to our state legislators when they're in session, the same rules we apply to our judges on the ballot. We should prohibit members of Congress from directly soliciting a campaign contribution. For my next act, I'm going to write a book on how to make friends in Washington. But look, we also know that not one side of the aisle has all the answers. And as a Republican, where I've seen a president lead us down the wrong road, I believe, on national security, on his strategy or lack of when it comes to ISIS and countering a real terror threat, I've spoken out against his policies. An individual mandate embedded in the president's health care plan that I still believe is unconstitutional for the government to dictate to you the level of health care coverage you must have. I've spoken out against it. I've introduced a repeal simply of the individual mandate. But again, on our side of the aisle, where I believe our party's not doing enough in the area of climate science, I'm a Republican who has said, let's accept the science and let's have a contest of ideas over how we address climate change. Because I believe conservative economic principles can address climate change, but also grow our economy. On issues like marriage equality, I believe we can protect the religious freedom of those who believe in traditional marriage, but also recognize the constitutional protections of everybody to marry whomever they believe. And finally, on the tough issue of the Second Amendment and how we balance the Second Amendment with homeland and national security, I do think both sides of the aisle need to do more to reach across the aisle. We can close the loopholes for background checks. We can strengthen background checks. We can also insist that our government provide due process before denying a constitutionally protected right embedded fundamentally in the Second Amendment. What I've tried to do is create a third way that rejects the dogmas of partisan politics and gets past it. That's on the ballot, folks. As a country, as a community, we are begging for a change in the political landscape. And we're either going to continue to go down the road that both sides of the aisle continue to take us, or we're actually going to stand up and say, we do want a third way. That's what I've tried to do. And I'll win or lose this race based on promising to continue to do it that way. Along the way, I've tried to honor the teachings of my predecessor, Mr. Young, in the areas of constituent casework, constituent assistance, reuniting a family with their adopted son in Africa who couldn't get out, getting a Tampa person released from a prison in the UAE when he was wrongfully jailed, reuniting a family after a car accident in Cuba left a USF college student stranded with no way to get home and no way to pay for her medical requirements. Veterans throughout our community that the VA continued to declare dead when they weren't actually dead, they were alive. We got the policy changed and we got their benefits reinstated. Working with Mayor Credicus in Clearwater to solve a reimbursement issue with HUD, working with Gulfport to start a study on their beach renourishment program, reauthorizing the program in Treasure Island that the mayor said was so critical in the area of beach renourishment. We've been able to get things done through the legislative process that has been successful despite the obstructionism that we see in Washington today. Our fisheries community, commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, we were able to start a new third-party data collection program to better manage the programs and give our men and women who like to fish more days on the water. For those with concerns over healthcare research, in the areas of Alzheimer's and melanoma, we have made advances as a result of very hard work done at the technical legislative level. And an area that I care very deeply about in the area of early childhood education, student readiness, student preparedness, and frankly, student nutrition, we have made dramatic advances in federal resources being invested in early childhood education. Programs that change lives, that create opportunities for people in all communities across this country. On infrastructure, we've made great advances when it comes to our airports. Our St. Pete Clearwater Airport, many of you may have seen the grant announcement recently, but also working with the Tampa Airport. Together, keeping our beaches pristine, working on issues like flood insurance to protect our economy, but working on the transportation nodes from our airports to our seaports that allow visitors to continue to come to Florida every day. We are doing the legwork that a member of Congress should do to get things done for their community. But I'm also doing everything I can with my heart and soul to change how politics is done in Washington. That is on the ballot. That is on the ballot. Folks, if you just subscribe to the solutions only of your own party, then I'm probably not your candidate. If you have litmus test boxes that you've got to check, I'm probably not your candidate. But if you're looking for somebody who has tried for 3 years and wants to continue to try to build consensus between the two parties, I'm asking for your support, and I'm asking for the opportunity to keep doing my job on your behalf in Washington, D.C. Thank you all very much. God bless you.
Can I borrow your mic?
I first want to thank Tiger Bay. Thank you for having both of us here today. Obviously, it's an important election. To say the least, it's an important election year. I know all of you are following it closely. It's going to be an interesting outcome. I think we only have 32 days to go. May it pass quickly. I grew up here. This is my home. My father, who is 84 years old, God bless him, is with us today, my best friend. Thank you, Dad. He practiced medicine here for 55 years and probably treated many of you in the audience today. He's treated me my whole life very well. So thank you, Dad, I love you. But I grew up in South St. Pete. I was born in Altoona, Pennsylvania, moved here when I was 3 years old. I went to Bay Vista Elementary School on the south side. I went to Bay Point Junior High School. Then we moved to the old Northeast, and I went to Riviera Middle School. After that, I went to St. Petersburg High School, graduating in 1974. We live in an amazing community. It's second to none, in my humble opinion. I think it is the jewel of Florida and our nation. And we have so much to be thankful for because of that. St. Petersburg is special, so is Clearwater, so is Lauman, so is Gulfport. This is a great district. It is the peninsula of the peninsula of Florida. It really is, Rick, in essence, a microcosm of our state, if you think about it, which I think is incredibly special. And a lot of you people I have known over the years and had the honor of knowing you and working with you as your governor, as your attorney general. Actually, his ad cites all of this stuff, but it talks about the fact that I am dedicated to public service, and I want you to know why. It's in my heart. I learned it very early in my life from my mother and my father. And I want to share a story with you about Dad. He was on the school board, you might remember. And the first time I got interested in politics, believe it or not, was 1966 when my dad ran for the Pinellas County School Board. And I'll tell you what happened. We were sitting at home on Colony Drive. It was a Saturday. He wasn't campaigning very much, to be honest with you. And he said, listen, the local party chairman said I ought to go out and do some campaigning. There's a picnic at Lake McGorry. You want to come with me? And I said, sure, I'll go along. And he goes, okay, let's go see what's going on down there. So we went to Lake McGorry. I'm 9 years old. Jim, he gives me some of his cards to pass out. He says, just go around the picnic tables and meet these people and ask them to vote for your dad. I did, and I enjoyed it very much. Just the interaction with people, I love people. I can't help it. It's who I am. And so that was my first experience, but the first office I ran for was at Bay Point Junior High School, when they didn't call middle schools yet. And I got elected in the seventh grade, and I've been involved ever since. I was senior class president at St. Pete High, student council president of Riviera. Yes, I have run for a lot of offices. Because I have a servant's heart. It's really what gives me joy, is to help others, treat them with respect, treat them with dignity. It comes down to a very simple rule, the golden rule, do unto others. Now, there are going to be important issues in this campaign. There already are. One of them, I believe, is Social Security. It is a promise to our senior citizens. They have paid into it their entire lives. I believe it needs to be protected and preserved, and I want to watch out for it and make sure that nobody takes it away or talks about privatizing it. Another thing that I think is incredibly important are veterans. We have to give veterans everything they asked for and everything that they so rightfully deserve. These wonderful Americans who have been willing to risk their lives to keep us free. Is there any way we can do too much for them? I do not think so. And finally, women. I was raised with three sisters. Unfortunately, I lost one last year, my older sister, Margaret. But I learned from my three sisters so much about women, how important they are, to cherish them, and how important it is to respect all people and all gender. And so I believe that a woman's right to choose is important to protect. That's where I stand on this issue, and David and I disagree, and that's okay. That's okay. But you need to know what we stand for and what we will fight for if we're in Washington. These are the things I will fight for. Social Security, I will fight for veterans, I will fight for women's rights, I will fight for equal pay for women. I will make sure that we protect our beaches, and I will make sure that we have the appropriate infrastructure again, that we in St. Petersburg and Pinellas County don't suffer from the kinds of experiences we've had lately when we have a lot of rain. That should never happen. And I believe that the new administration in Washington will be laser focused on infrastructure. I understand that Secretary Clinton wants to invest about $520 billion in infrastructure. You know what that could do for Florida? It would be amazing. Help us with transportation. Help us with our sewage systems. Help us be sure that we have the roads that we need. Maybe even a bullet train. Who knows? You have to think big. We are blessed. We are blessed to live where we do. This is a special place. And we deserve to have somebody in the United States Congress who understands you and really wants to go and fight for you. I have done it literally all of my life. And I don't want to stop because it gives me joy. And I will work hard for you. I will be honest to you. I will be transparent. I always have. In fact, when I was governor and got elected in 2006, we opened up the office of open government in the governor's office for the first time ever. These things matter and they are important. This is going to be a good afternoon. We look forward to your questions. I know you'll be cordial and I know you'll be tough. I think we're both up to that. So we look forward to it. God bless you. Thank you for being here.
I think that she is steady. experienced, straightforward, tough, smart, and ready to lead our country.
So, Wigby, I don't do this one card thing, but I'll tell you this. I'm not going to defend either one because I don't support either one. I think Secretary Clinton, frankly, personally for me, is wrong on her economic policy and domestic policy. And I think Donald Trump's foreign policy is something that risks making us less secure as a nation. So neither one have my support, neither one have my defense either. You see, Obamacare, it's very simple, folks. The politics got injected in this, the feelings got hardened, both sides dug their heels in. The truth is, Obamacare created winners and losers. Folks like your daughter who perhaps needed care now could get it, and that's a good thing. But there are folks who lost their care, folks who lost their plans. It did become the lie of the year. Small businesses who saw premiums spike, small businesses who had to lay people off. Now people on the exchange are seeing their policies double or triple. Congress has actually made 15 changes together with the president because there are problems with the law. So I am thrilled that your daughter got the coverage she needed. And any approach to Obamacare should make sure that she still remains covered. But we can't on either side of the aisle wrap ourselves in the winners and say it's a good law, or just wrap ourselves in the losers and not recognize that there were benefits to it. I do think we need to replace it. I think the individual mandate is unconstitutional. I do think it has driven up costs, and I do think it has canceled plans. We know that. So while your daughter received additional coverage, if we don't address Obamacare, what are we going to do for the people who lost it this year? People who lost coverage. People who might be in the situation today that your daughter was in. That's what we're trying to do.
Move these chairs. The other mics are having a hard time picking up when you guys stand out here. So we just need to scoot them back a little bit.
Sure, sure.
So you're a little closer in that vicinity. So thank you. Sorry.
It's all right. Okay. Yes, sir. With the hair like mine. Now.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry.
Congressman John. Herb Dayton, St. Pete resident. It's interesting that the payments on a Harley-Davidson are about the same as healthcare premiums. If a young person would go with the Harley rather than the premiums and then have an accident, I have to pay for it. Or do we just push them to the side of the road?
Right. So this is another, look, this is another fallacy of the national debate, that there are no alternatives. Here's how we cover young people with affordable healthcare. I've talked about it for 3 years. You wouldn't know it based on the TV commercial attack ads. Many people in this room have term life insurance plans. The earlier you buy it, the cheaper it is. You buy it for a term certain, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Your premiums stay the same. The insurance company can't raise your premiums. They can't cancel it on you if you have intervening health events. Like, you could have 3 heart attacks. They can't cancel your term health or your term life insurance policy. Term life is one of the least regulated insurance products we have. It is an example of the success of a deregulated insurance product that provides affordable coverage for people who need it for a long term that can't be canceled. So for a young person who has to choose, I think we could create a term marketplace in health insurance that is portable across state lines, which Obamacare does not allow for today, that can be reimbursed by an employer, which Obamacare does not allow for today, that can't be canceled based on intervening health events, which Obamacare does not allow for today.
we do have a responsibility to talk about alternatives to the president's health care plan. And I'm happy to do that because I believe there is a way to provide affordable long-term coverage for everyone without the heavy hand of government. And frankly, Charlie agreed with me 7 years ago. Sure. Yes, ma'am.
Susan McGrath, Representative Jolly, can you tell us if you have greater regrets about lobbying for the privatization of Social Security or offshore drilling?
So, Susan, there's a reason I called on you to ask that. Because we've been trying to reach you for 3 weeks to ask you to correct the record. Because it is peddling a false narrative. I don't support privatizing Social Security. I did not lobby for offshore oil drilling. And in fact, I've worked with Gwen Graham across the aisle to strengthen the ban on offshore oil drilling. I have voted in Congress, just a second, you can clap in a minute. I voted in Congress against my party's own Social Security plan. Now here's the irony, and here's why I want the STOP Act. Because I think members of Congress should stop asking you for money so they can lie on television. I think they should do their job and represent their community. I'd ask Charlie to do the same thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Wendy Grassi. Congressman Jolly, many, many of your constituents here in St. Pete work at the Planned Parenthood right here in your own district. And hundreds of your constituents go there for birth control, cancer screenings, disease prevention and education services that account for over 95% of what Planned Parenthood provides. Congressman Jolly, you voted against funding for Planned Parenthood. How can you vote against your own constituents right here on Martin Luther King Street who need this affordable health care facility?
Thank you. Thank you for the question, and you're going to see a lot of TV ads on this as well that are false. If I were to make a TV ad, it would be to share with my community this. It was David Jolly that fought to restore funding for critical women's health care when Congress asked to defund Planned Parenthood. It is the Jolly language in the House that says if we are going to suspend funding for Planned Parenthood during the investigation, we have to restore top-level funding for critical women's health care in underserved communities. And the facts matter, folks. Do you realize Planned Parenthood as a vendor of health care represents only 3% of the health care centers across the country? Represents only 4% across the state of Florida. We have one in St. Petersburg, but we have 10 community health centers in Pinellas County. The funding we were talking about for Planned Parenthood would not have shut down Planned Parenthood. They could still operate with $800 million a year to provide those services. This was suspending taxpayer money during the investigation. We should ensure that critical women's health care services are provided in underserved communities. It is why I sponsored the legislation to provide funding for women's health care services. And it is also why, when they had a vote on the investigation into Planned Parenthood, I was the only Republican that voted against the investigation. This is a real issue. If you saw the videotapes, at least half the country was incredibly concerned about it. Congress has a responsibility to listen, but we have a responsibility to act in a responsible manner for all of our constituents. And that's what I tried to do on a very difficult issue. The commercials on TV won't tell you that. We know that. Listen, Charlie's support for veterans, we agree. Don't privatize the VA. Social Security, we agree. Don't privatize Social Security. Fund women's health care, we agree. But you package it in poll-tested sound bites, and I understand why you have concerns about my record. It's just based on an inaccurate message by paid political committees. So thank you.
Governor Chris, you, Todd Jennings, you spoke about giving veterans everything they need. If you were our congressman and a veteran came to you and said, I want to use my VA benefits at the doctor of my choice, what would you say?
Of course. Why not? It's the appropriate thing to do. I mean, if you want to respect them and honor them, then you should respect their wishes, too,
in the choice of their doctor. I mean, I think that's only appropriate. Unfortunately, and you need to know this because you're going to have to place a vote pretty soon. Some of you may already have done so because we do so much by mail in this county. But my opponent voted against raising another $15 million for the VA in just 2015. Now, if I had been in the seat at that time, I would have voted for it. You all know and have heard extensively about the problems at the Veterans Administration, the wait time, difficulty getting an appointment, that some of the records may have been altered to help the metrics, even here at Bay Pines. Well, if you properly fund the Veterans Administration, I believe they would have a better opportunity to do a better job for the people who deserve it so much. We agree that veterans need to be served well, but there's talk and then there are votes. And when it comes time to vote in Congress and time to put another $15 million into the VA, I would have voted yes, and David voted no.
Thank you, Governor. A question for both candidates. There's been a lot of Kelly Commission around colleges. Conversation about campaign finance reform. For both of you, what would you do to address the issue? And then more importantly, rather than perhaps just say it's an issue, what would you do to actually achieve success that would actually result in meaningful reform?
Well, thank you for the question. I think you understand David's position. He is supporting an act that he is sponsoring. That would not allow or permit candidates to personally solicit funds. I think an even better approach would be to get rid of what I think is a terrible ruling by the United States Supreme Court, Citizens United. Yes. Citizens United essentially allows for dark money, corporate money, unlimited funds to be able to come into a campaign, wherever that campaign might be, and really not be transparent in the manner that it is done. I believe in transparency. Any money that our campaign raises, you can go up and look it up and who it's coming from. You know, whether it's coming from people here in Pinellas County or citizens of the state of Florida or a lot of people from Washington, D.C. I'm not getting much from Washington, D.C. I'm running against an incumbent. And that's just the nature of that city, I suppose. And that's okay. But I think it is important that you know where we stand. I think it's all right for a candidate or an American to have the ability to work hard themselves and do what they can for their small business or their campaign. But I do not believe that it's appropriate to have large corporations be able to come in some district in Florida or Nevada and all of a sudden take over a campaign and you don't even know where it's coming from or who's doing it. That, I think, is wrong, and that's why I support ending Citizens United.
Charlie, you can't nuance a lie into the truth. You are getting all of your support from Washington, D.C. It's called House Majority PAC. They're paying for the ads that Susan was talking about. They're paying for the ads that we see on TV, calling me dangerous.
Respect, my friend, I am not getting all my support from them. We've worked hard.
Reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Teach me what I need to do next year.
I'm currently working with Democrats on a bipartisan response to Citizens United because we need to address it. I also think we should prohibit members of Congress from raising money. You won't take a position on that. I think we should consider tax credits for low-dollar donations to involve more people in the process. But let's go back to the VA issue for just a moment. Because for two straight years under my work on the Appropriations Committee, the VA has been better funded and has the highest budget it's ever had in the history of the department. And this is serious. This is serious. To talk about a procedural vote with a $15 million gimmick in there, let's talk substance. Because part of the concern of the Congress is a president who proposed a $300 million VA hospital in Denver that turned into a $1.5 billion boondoggle project. Congress has a responsibility to provide oversight. So you know what we did? We said you're not getting an additional dollar for bricks and mortar until you fix the health care and benefits backlog at the VA. And we're going to make sure you not only have the money you've requested, but more than you've ever asked for. So we have funded the VA, rightfully so, at the highest budget level possible. I am pleased that you have now endorsed my VA Freedom Card as well. to give every veteran the choice. Listen, folks, you're going to see this on TV. I know the way the ads are going. Next week, the House Majority Democrats in Washington are either going to tell you I'm for privatizing Social Security or privatizing the VA. They're both wrong. What I want for our veterans is choice. If they want to go to the VA, where so many do, we should make sure the VA is great and provides them the care. But if they want to go outside, they've earned the right to choose where they receive their medical care. It's called the VA Freedom Act, and I've introduced it. Thank you.
I'm Gregory Wilson. First of all, thank you both for honoring a 38-year tradition of making Suncoast Tiger Bay Club an important forum to participate in. My question is for both of you. I know you'll like that. You know, we're watching Hurricane Matthew come towards Florida. You've already identified a peninsula on a peninsula. There's probably nowhere in America more vulnerable to water than Pinellas County, where you both represent. First of all, a quick yes or no on climate change. But more to the point, could you please distinguish your differences and agreements on flood insurance that we can afford to continue to call Pinellas County our home?
Thank you, Gregory. I believe in climate change. I think David signed on to a bill yesterday, if I understood it right, that essentially does the same thing. We are the state that is the most susceptible to rising sea level. There's no question about it. I mean, it used to be, Ken, that when the president would come to Florida, this president, he would talk about Miami, Miami Beach specifically, and how Alton Road is flooding. If those of you are familiar with South Florida, when it's flooding when it's not raining, because it's rising. Well, as I said, I've lived here for 57 years. And, you know, as I go to visit my mother and father in Northeast St. Pete on Snell Isle, driving from downtown where Carol and I live, I can see the difference in the level of Tampa Bay. It's noticeable to me. And so it is obvious to me that we need to do something about it. When I was governor, I had the opportunity to convene essentially the first climate change summit in Florida's history, along with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and Robert Kennedy, and some other notable people, Vinod Khosrow, who founded Sun Microsystems. Smart, caring people who wanted to make a difference and help us have an opportunity to make the planet safe for a much longer period of time. And I'm very proud of that work. And I issued, I think Tim wrote about it, I issued executive orders at the time that would have reduced our carbon emissions and done things to really help Florida be a leader in this area. I think more and more people are coming around to the view, fortunately, and I'm glad that David has as well, that climate change is real, that it is impacting us, and you're absolutely right. We, in this district, are a peninsula on the peninsula. Biggert Waters Bill, let me address very quickly. This is where the congressman and I agree. I believe, as he does, I believe what he believes, that national catastrophic insurance would be one of the best ways to alleviate this problem and keep our insurance low.
Thank you for the question. Yes, I believe the climate's changing. Man's had an impact. We should have a contest of ideas over the solutions. On flood, this is something I've spent 3 years working on. And I would like to see a more private sector-based flood insurance sector viable. But until we have that, I have introduced what is called a National Natural Disaster Reinsurance Program. I did it through months of work with the National Association of Realtors, with other insurance advocacy organizations, and I'm proud today to have the endorsement of the National Association of Realtors as a result of the work that we've done on flood insurance. On the private sector side, what can we do? If you really work closely with insurance providers, they need data. And there's a breakdown not only in how FEMA has mapped and is using old maps, but they are resisting releasing data. As a direct result of the work that we were able to do with FEMA, we got FEMA to agree to now release per parcel loss data in a way that protects privacy to allow a competitive private sector market to outcompete the National Flood Insurance Program. Are we there yet? Not yet on the private sector side, which is why I do think we need to continue to push for a national natural disaster reinsurance plan. A fund that combines all risks, all regions, all hazards from Florida to Washington, from the Northeast to the Southwest on areas of flood, hurricanes, tornadoes, ice, snow, and what it might be. Under my plan, It is a three-tiered process that starts with the homeowner's private insurance plan. If there's a natural catastrophe that reaches outside of the coverage, then a state natural disaster fund would back that up. The state natural disaster fund could purchase reinsurance from a national natural disaster reinsurance fund. This is, folks, regardless of party, this is one of those issues that keeps me up at night, and here's why. There are issues sometimes that are so regional in nature. The job of a member of Congress is to convince 400 other members of Congress why it's important. It's true on flood insurance, we're ground zero. It was true recently on Zika as well. As a Florida delegation, we have to insist we rise above politics on this and convince a Congress to do the right thing. Commissioner Welch.
Ken Welch, thank you both for your service. How will you address Tampa Bay and Pinellas County's woefully inadequate transportation infrastructure?
That's an issue we've had for a long time. Thank you, Commissioner, for the question. I think there's several things. One thing I would not do is what apparently the DOT, the Department of Transportation, was talking about doing to Howard Franklin with some new tolls. I don't think that's appropriate. You've already paid your taxes. I do believe that there are alternatives that we could look at, things like light rail, like additional roads, like more infrastructure. And frankly, let's be honest about it. Whoever wins the presidential race, I think, will have an enormous impact on the infrastructure issues that face not only us here, Ken, but throughout the country. Roads, bridges, you know, there's so much that we can do. I know that lately local governments have looked at ferrying as an option. When I was a kid on Pinellas Point, there was a ferry that went down to Bradenton. That's not going to alleviate a lot of stress. But if we had a bullet train in Central Florida, if we had light rail, if we had more mass transit that was affordable for our people, working people that need more options in order to be able to get home, to have more of those options at night, you know, they don't continue to serve in the evening. You know, not everybody is wealthy or doing well. There's a lot of hardworking people out there that need options to be able to go to work, to get home safely, and have the kind of people in office that are compassionate about that, that will make sure that those things happen. That's what I would do.
Thank you for the question. Look, it's clear the local leadership within Pinellas, the county level, the city level, is continuing to push for important multimodal solutions, and I support that. We've worked together on everything from rails to trails to the airports to expanded bus lines to last mile service and so forth. I appreciate the fact that Secretary Clinton is talking about a national infrastructure bank as well. I would agree with the National Infrastructure Bank. The question is, how do you pay for $500 billion? And I don't believe you pay for it by increasing tax burdens. Here's how I would suggest we pay for a national infrastructure bank. Let's deem offshore corporate money repatriated at a rate of between 8.5% and 10%. Force the repatriation of offshore U.S. corporate money and put those proceeds in an infrastructure bank that can be competed for by state and federal or state and local stakeholders. There is offshore corporate money. More continues to go that way. This is a difference of opinion between the parties. The Democratic side of the aisle, at least at the presidential level, has suggested the way we're going to prevent more money from going offshore is to create more penalties and more taxes. I want to get the offshore money onshore. And so if you work with chambers of commerce and other organizations, they've reached an agreement that, look, if you want to deem, mandate all of our offshore profits to now be domesticated, and you deem it at a rate of 10% or lower, we'll support it. I think we could recognize a significant investment injected into an infrastructure bank to fund critical transportation projects here locally and throughout the state.
Yes.
David Clement, Governor Crist, and Congressman Jolly. It seems to me, and I'm sure many and too many in this room, that Florida has a serious problem in its commitment to preserving its natural resources, especially its groundwater and surface water. In the last few weeks, we've seen spills, continual spills of sewage into the rivers and streams and bays. We've seen mining wastewater go into the aquifer in the next county. Down south, we've seen Lake Okeechobee releases toxic algae-laden water into the rivers and streams on both our coasts. Is there a role for Congress in doing something about this, since Florida doesn't have a commitment?
Good question. Of course there is. Congress is your government.
You know, what you're talking about, these issues of infrastructure, whether it relates to sewage here in Pinellas County, whether it relates to what's happened in the Everglades, and the algae bloom that we all saw and read about during the course of the summer, of course things can be done about that from the federal level. They're already in a partnership, but there are many gaps in that partnership, unfortunately. You're right. The state isn't doing a whole lot about it these days. For whatever reason, the priorities have changed. I can tell you, when I had the honor of serving as your governor, one of the things I did was work with the sugar farmers to try to purchase land near Lake Okeechobee in order to restore the natural flow so you wouldn't have to have the discharges into the St. Lucie River and the Caloosahatchee River on the West Coast. Now, thank you. We had to downsize that purchase. I had the pleasure of serving during the Great Recession, which is a challenging experience. But we were still able to purchase over 70,000 acres to be able to help start to do the preservation that I think is necessary for the Everglades. But as it relates to other water issues and infrastructure issues from the federal level, look what the Congress has done for Flint. These things can be done. I think that needs to be done here. We need to have an advocate from this district, from this county, that understands when sewage is pouring into over 200 million gallons of it, we better speak up and get something done. Now, I am glad that David has come around to that position and he's requested the EPA to do so. But frankly, as a constituent, I was disappointed that I had to remind him of it during our last debate, and that's what brought him to do it. So I think it's important to have leadership. You have to have leadership that understands and is aware and cognizant of the concerns of the district you're representing, and I will. Thank you.
Let's start with the Everglades. Congress, just on a bipartisan way, was able to get through a project to continue to address the Central Everglades Planning Project. Unfortunately, as a result of the mismanagement for many years, this is now a 40 or 50 year very high capital intensive reconstruction project to get water to flow south. We are making incremental progress. That's the good news. There is a role. There is a role for the federal EPA to investigate clean water violations that we saw here in the city of St. Petersburg as a result of the mismanagement of the city, which is why I asked for the investigation. There are clean water standards that need to be faithfully abided by. And I believe, as a result of a very courageous whistleblower, we will determine that the mismanagement was not a result of a United States Congress who has nothing to do with the sewer system, but it was a result of the mismanagement of city leadership that Charlie continues to stand by despite the environmental disaster. So yes, when this issue did come up, I did respond like I have to many other mayors in town to say, how can I help? I did speak to Mayor Kreisman the next day. And I said, tell me how I can help. Come to Washington. I'll set up a meeting between you, Ms. Castor, myself, EPA, any federal agency that you think can help the city, come to Washington. He hasn't taken me up on that offer. I also went to the whistleblower and I said, how can I help? And he took me up on the offer. And as a result, we now have a state investigation by the Fish and Wildlife Commission over egregious negligence that possibly raises to the level of criminal activity as a result of, yes, responding to your request that I get more involved. The city now is facing a very significant investigation.
Yes, sir.
Jack Thompson. In 2008, the Supreme Court rendered the Heller decision. It's found constitutionally that I can possess a firearm in my house. Mrs. Clinton says we got it wrong. She wants to change it. She also wants to look at the Australian model for confiscation of firearms. Where do you guys stand on that?
Thank you, sir. This is a very important issue to an awful lot of people. I support the Second Amendment. I always have. And I'm a hunter. And I think it's important to respect the rights of gun owners, and so I do. But I also have common sense. And I have seen what we have witnessed in this country in recent history, most particularly in Orlando, at the Pulse nightclub. And it is readily apparent to me, as a common sense guy, that more stringent background checks are absolutely essential to this problem. And I think would go a long way to helping resolve the violence that we see in our country and our state today by getting guns out of the hands who are not able to really do it. Number two, it is equally obvious to me that assault weapons should be banned. I don't understand the need for assault weapons, and I'm a hunter. You know, you don't need an assault weapon to go hunt deer. You really don't. And why we need to have weapons of war in the hands of our citizens, and unfortunately sometimes getting into the hands of people that use them wrongly, makes no sense. We used to have an assault weapon ban in this country. I don't know why it went away, except for maybe the lobby in Washington. Anyway, that's how I feel about it. That's what I think we ought to do.
I think it's the Second Amendment provides you a constitutional right to keep and own a firearm in your home. I do support strengthening background checks, and I think responsible gun owners can do that. Second Amendment advocates can do that. I think some of the greatest voices to talk about the fallacies of background checks are our law enforcement leaders in communities around the country, many who are conservative Second Amendment advocates. So yes, as a Republican, I have supported expanded background checks, universal background checks. I think those are appropriate. When it comes to specific classes of weapons, I think we should have heightened background checks for high-capacity weapons. But frankly, I side with the Brady campaign to end gun violence that says if we fix the background checks, the class of weapon becomes irrelevant because we will make sure through strengthened background checks that no individual who shouldn't have a firearm has the opportunity to acquire one.
Yes.
Pressure is on. I'm Corey Adler. I work every day with families who are living in extreme poverty. We have some of the highest pockets of poverty in the state right here. When families make an attempt to work their way out of poverty, they are penalized by having benefits reduced or taken away. So what are you actively going to do to support families who want to get a hold of shared economic prosperity? This is to both of you.
Look, thank you for that question. And I think if you talk to community leaders and folks like yourself who live and breathe this, it is a multifaceted approach to how do we create the opportunity for any individual to create their own success in life, their own economic independence, if you will. And so it is multifaceted, in my opinion. We do have to look at programs like early childhood education, workforce training, ensuring people have the tools. But to your point, there are many government programs that have this cliff. It is why the genesis of the earned income tax credit to begin to move people off of it. We see it in areas of subsidized health care like Medicaid and so forth. And listen, to the point of Obamacare, and this isn't to take a cheap shot, certainly not at you, sir, but at President Bill Clinton, this was one of the concerns he just articulated in the last 48 hours, that Obamacare is hurting people who make just too much money, that they don't qualify, and they are seeing the increased premiums. This is an area where I think any government program that provides an investment in what I call human potential, from early childhood education to dropout prevention to workforce training to income subsistence to frankly providing a safety net to those families who fall into a wage gap or fall into economic uncertainty, we have to ensure that there is a pathway to economic certainty and economic success for themselves. I do think it is multifaceted when you look at issues from healthcare to workforce to education to frankly financial assistance, subsistence in our federal programs, that we make sure there's a pathway for each one of those so that nobody ends up falling off that cliff that you're referring to.
Yeah, thanks for the question. It's incredibly important. You know, there's an old expression, but for the grace of God, there go I. And when you're talking about individuals that can't afford and haven't had opportunities to do better in their life, I think all of us have a responsibility to try to help. But certainly a member of Congress can be significant in that regard. There's an issue that's being discussed nationally during this current campaign about minimum wage. And what is the appropriate thing to do about people on minimum wage? Should it be raised or should it not? I believe that it should be raised. I think that that's important, and I think it would change the opportunities for an awful lot of people who deserve it, frankly. And there's an argument against it that if you raise the minimum wage, then some small businesses are going to have to let some people go. I don't subscribe to that, and I'll tell you why, and it's based on evidence. Look at the city of Seattle, who has raised their minimum wage, and they are flourishing in that city. And almost everywhere you can find where it has been raised, that has been replicated over and over. In addition, I think it's about education. You know, about having community college education be free. You know, we have a great college right here in St. Petersburg, St. Pete College. And the service it provides to so many people is extraordinary. My sister even works there, Kathy. And I think it's really important that we provide that kind of education to so many, where additional education would make a world of difference. I have always felt that education is a civil right, that it is the equal opportunity provider in our country. And if we continue to do so and expand that opportunity, we will have better opportunities going forward. I think this is the last chance we get to speak, because I don't think we have a closing. So I ask for your vote. It's a serious race. It's a serious election. I think you have good choices, but nobody will work harder for you in the United States Congress than Charlie Crist. God bless you and thank you.
Thank you. It's fun.